And now to a novel Time magazine called one of this summer's must-reads. It begins in 1917. 18-year-old Bea is sent away by her wealthy Jewish family after she becomes pregnant, a one-night stand. Her parents have arranged for the baby to go to an orphanage, but Bea decides to leave her under a pear tree in her uncle's orchard in Gloucester, Massachusetts, in hopes that the impoverished Irish family that steals the fruit in the dark of the night will take the baby too. Will they? Bea and we, the readers of this lovely new novel, watch and wait behind a stone wall.
They emerged from the gap in a silent swarm, tall and short, in dark, shapeless clothing, their faces and hands pale. Bea could not determine at first a leader. They carried ladders, three figures to each, held tight at their sides as they headed for the trees. They were like fairies, Bea thought, until she heard a man's voice, quiet but clear. Get off your blasted arses and up those trees. Bea positioned Aunt Vera's whistle in her hand. The ladders rose, their tops narrower than their bottoms, and Bea nearly shrieked, thinking of the tiny body, thinking she should have wrapped it in something brighter than Aunt Vera's shawl, should have set it farther out from the trunk of the tree so it would catch the moonlight, or farther in so it wouldn't get trampled.
Don't worry, it gets found. Author Anna Solomon reading the gripping beginning to Leaving Lucy Pear, which is also about the then-blossoming birth control movement and what happens when a child has two umbilical cords, the one she's born with and the one to the pear thief who finds her. Anna Solomon joins us from NPR New York. Hi.
Hi.
I know I left out another thread in your storyline, Prohibition. The pears are stolen to make a certain mash. Why did you pick this time?
Well, you know, at first I was sort of drawn into the late teens and really the 20s, which is when most of the book takes place, for I think the reason that a lot of people are, which is really the glamour, the clothing and the art and the jazz and all of this excitement, this sort of loosening of Victorian social constraints. And then as I got deeper into it, I was more drawn to, you know, the darker side. And, you know, Prohibition on the face of it was presented as being about protecting women and children. But, you know, it was a more puritanical law in many ways than even the Puritans could have dreamt up. And as we know now, resulted in more crime and violence than it did in abstinence, for sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, just as striking, in the wake of World War I, there was this virulent wave of xenophobia that swept the country, which both nationalists and white supremacists in particular really used to their advantage to demonize not only immigrants, but also people with different politics, different color, different language than their own. And all this prompted, of course, a lot of anger and backlash. And so the political extremes of the time, you know, it's hard not to see a certain resonance with the time we're living in now. And the more deeply I got into it, the more I saw that it couldn't just be sort of the backdrop for my story, but that my characters' lives needed to be bound up in it and implicated.
Well, for instance, Bea is Jewish, as we said, but her mother kind of pretends that she's not,
right,
which is maybe the safer thing to do. You mentioned the fear of immigrants. We're reminded that, you know, Italians were one of the groups that was sort of limited in that Immigration Act because it was thought that Italians were stupid and would not, you know, be able to adapt to U.S. life. And you also have the anarchist movement and Sacco and Vanzetti, the two Italians who are accused of murdering two guards. They claim innocence, and it causes uprising around the world. We feel these, you know, spasms as we read.
Yeah. I mean, I think I was interested in the way in which these national and international movements are really felt on a local level, both felt and also affected by the local. And so, you know, the book revolves around this granite quarry. The granite industry was big in Gloucester, Cape Ann, Massachusetts, and a lot of places at that time. And the workers there rise up in protest of Sacco and Vanzetti's execution, as they did in many parts of the country and the world.
Yeah, and talk more about Gloucester. People are familiar with this, the piece of land that juts out into the sea. The film The Perfect Storm is about, you know, the fishing community there that's quite struggling. You grew up there. How many of the stories that you tell in the new book were things that you heard?
A fair amount of them are sort of things that I heard, but usually they're sort of things that I heard and then I took and turned sideways or inside out, yeah, and used in a different way. There was one woman who I spoke with who was alive during this time in the 20s, and she talked about things like, you know, the way that the granite dust felt on her feet, mm-hmm, which just stuck with me on that kind of sensory level. I grew up with some pear trees down beneath my house, and we did, in fact, for a few summers, at some point, all the pairs would just be gone suddenly. We would wake up in the morning and they were gone. And so that piece of the book, this sort of idea of who took these pairs, and they must have really needed them on some level, the mystery of that stayed with me and definitely sort of just drew me into the story.
We read in the acknowledgments that your father said that to you. Whoever took them must have needed them. And Bee's uncle says it to her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they must have needed them. And in this case, they did. This Irish family that I don't think we're giving too much away, it's right at the beginning of the book, picks up this little bundle of a newborn baby and raises her as their own. What did you want to say about those kinds of class issues that rise up when you've got a, you know, pair of thieves and the child of a Jewish woman from the city?
Yeah, I mean, I think I was trying to, you know, write about people from very different backgrounds who wind up being completely entwined and in love with the same girl in very different ways, and the ways in which their class and their religions and the strictures of each of their cultures might keep them apart ordinarily, but that they're really brought here to face each other.
Yeah. You, as we said, grew up in Gloucester and are Jewish?
I am, yeah.
And so as part of your experience, because we don't think of that as a Jewish enclave.
No, it's not. It's not. In fact, I was doing a reading recently where someone came in and said, well, I don't think there are any Jews there. There wouldn't have been Jews there at this time. And I said, but, well, you're wrong. But but it's true that it's, you know, it's really a place that traditionally has had a lot of Italian and Irish fishermen in it and also a lot of WASPs in it. And so growing up Jewish there, I felt at once I really belonged. You know, I was born there. I had a real connection to the land and the water. You know, I had my own little dinghy that I would putt around in and I would spend time picking mussels. And I felt very much a part of it. But on the other hand, I could see that there was a way in which I didn't quite belong. And that really stuck with me. I mean, I think a lot of writers grow up with some feeling of being an outsider, even in the place where they are from. And it does cause one to observe and also to experience that feeling of alienation in a certain way and outsiderness or removal that I think allows us to write.
I'm wondering, too, about some of the other stories we hear. Are they based in truth? There's a moment where Bee is having terrible headaches. Her mother, who is, again, very officious, decides it's a buoy, you know, that's out, that's a whistling buoy. When the wind hits it, it makes a lot of noise. And so she has it removed because she can pull some strings. And a ship crashes, and some of these workers die. And then we also hear about, you know, the alcohol running, whatever it would be, rum running, whatever they were making off the coast. Are those stories that you researched?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And actually, the kind of initial seed of the book was this piece of history that I found in a history book about Cape Ann that talked about this woman who had been suffering from a, quote, nervous disorder that was being aggravated by this whistle buoy and how she used her connections with the Navy to have it taken out. So everything there wound up in fine in truth, but in my sort of novelist self, the plot wheels got churning and I was thinking, well, what if when that whistle buoy is taken out, there is a disaster, there is a consequence, and then she's responsible for that. And the fact that then she is the summer person from away makes that situation all the more tense.
Oh, yeah. You know, I always, we read the acknowledgments and we love them. And Anna Solomon, your book, Leaving Lucy Pear, is being recommended as a summer read. But it occurred to me you could jump off and we could read some of the books you read. One Summer by Bill Bryson, The Jews of Boston by Jonathan D. Sarna, Ellen Smith and Scott Martin Kosofsky, The Woman's Bible by Elizabeth Cady Stanton.
Oh, yeah.
And then you also have your characters read To the Lighthouse.
Yeah, Virginia Woolf.
So we recommend, you know, maybe some of the books that inspired you. But why To the Lighthouse?
Virginia Woolf, for me, like for so many writers and people, was so influential on my consciousness as a writer, but also as a human. And I kind of credit her, too, for helping me make the shift. I had written a lot of poetry mostly. And when I was shifting to prose writing, I think that her style and her understanding of sort of the human condition helped me kind of find my voice. Bringing in To the Lighthouse in this book for me was sort of an homage to her and a way of also thinking about my character's relationship to what they were reading, which is such a pleasure to think, you know, as a reader, knowing the way in which books have moved and changed me to then jump into my characters and how books would have done that for them is a real pleasure.
The book is Leaving Lucy Pear by Anna Solomon. Just a terrific read. Anna, thank you so much.
Thank you.